Thanks, Maura. Thank you. Morning, everyone. Great to see you. I say great to see you. I genuinely thought nobody would turn up. I thought Glenn's in the big tent, but it's such an important topic that we're thinking about today. As Maura said, I work with LICC and help lead a church in South London, married to a wonderful lady called Lisa, who does like riding on the back of my motorbike, with two children, Brianna and Jackson. Today we're thinking about this topic of retirement under the title of Repurpose, Discovering Fresh Purpose in Our Retirement. And our two seminars this morning and tomorrow morning kind of dovetail together. So if you find today helpful, hopefully, you might come back tomorrow. Now, we'll face the elephant in the room because I think a lot of you, as you walked in and looked at me, thought, why is this young whippersnapper leading a seminar on retirement? That's a fair question. I'm 56, but it's starting to come into view. You start to think about it. I don't have a reason why I'm doing it. Mark Green said, Steve, they want something on retirement. Would you do it? I have done this session a number of times before, so I hope that it will be helpful to us as we contemplate this. And we come at this prayerfully, just giving ourselves some space to try and think about this. Because I think when we transition into these different stages of life, often we are more shaped by the world around us than we are by the word of God about particular seasons of our lives. And we can come to retirement, it's kind of the title of tomorrow's session, thinking more about kind of vacation rather than vocation. Thinking more about, oh, maybe I'm going to spend my time improving my golf swing, maybe the garden will finally get done, and we'll go traveling or whatever it might be. And those are not bad things to do. But just to pause and think, what does God want in this particular season of my life? The Olympics start, is it tomorrow? Is it opening ceremony tomorrow? It starts over the weekend. I wonder if you remember this particular, we're thinking in this session about continuing fruitfulness. But I wonder whether you remember this moment. It wasn't an Olympics, it was part of the triathlon. I'm just going to show you this little clip. In a race, a triathlon race with the Brownlee brothers, Johnny and his brother Alistair. And you may remember this. Let me just show it to you.
Oh, goodness me. This is a horrible sight. Jonathan Brownlee has lost it now and has staggered to a stop at the side of the course. And Alistair's stopped to help him along. And Alistair is going to try and carry his brother home. Dramatic scenes in Cozumel as the Olympic champion carries his younger brother towards the podium.
Oh my God, I cannot believe what we are seeing here, Matt. Is this allowed? Is he allowed to help his brother? You know, is that part of the rules? I'm not too sure. We've never seen anything like this before.
Unbelievable scenes. Unbelievable scenes in Cozumel. The Brownlee brothers arm in arm. But it's not by way of celebration. Henry Schumann's celebrating. He's going to win this race in Cozumel out of nowhere. But we have to be concerned about the health of Jonathan Brownlee. And they're not even on the final stretch yet. Schumann wins in Cozumel. The brothers are coming home arm in arm to finish in second and third. But Johnny can hardly stand. And Alistair is having to drag him across the line and pushing him home for second. Johnny finishes in second. Goodness me. What an...
I'm glad you found that bit funny at the end because it's... I'll just pause it there. It was one of those moments in the race. So generally, Alistair wins more often than his brother Johnny. Johnny had the opportunity to win the world championship in that race. And that's what happened to him in the final part of the race. And the story went out around the world. And I showed it to Maura just before. And the reaction genuinely is, oh, what an incredible moment. These brothers, Alistair helping his brother. And the news, all the different news agencies had them on. And they talked about how incredible this moment was. What a wonderful picture of brotherly love shown to each other. But this is actually what Alistair said about his brother Johnny in it. He said, I wish the flipping idiot had just paced it right and won. He was really hard on him in that moment. He was kind of like, you were foolish. He said, because triathlon is about, it's about this race where you swim and you cycle and you run. And the transition moments are so key. If you don't pay attention in the transition moments, you can end up in trouble. The Bible, doesn't it, talks to us about how we are called to run the race that God has marked out for us. And there's a sense in which if we do not pay attention at key transition moments in our race, in our journey, I think we can get ourselves off track. We can find ourselves, particularly, in the season of retirement, thinking, well, who am I? What am I here to do? And like, we're all at sea with it. We're not sure what's going on. And I think that's a pretty good picture of how it can be for us. Say in Hebrews, it says, let us run with endurance the race that God has marked out for us. Again, I think the culture, and sometimes even the church, can make us think that, well, perhaps they're done with me. It's time to leave it to the youngsters. I'm supposed to slow down at this stage. All sorts of things that can affect the way in which we approach retirement. We're disciples, each one of us. At LICC, one of the ways in which we would define somebody who is a disciple is like this, that a disciple is someone who is learning to follow the way of Jesus in their context at this moment. Now, even in this room, even thinking about this one single subject, as we approach this, it will be different for each of us, and we'll touch on that today. But you will have different contexts that you find yourself in, the place where you live, the particular family that you're a part of, the things that are unique to you. And in this moment, so what it's like to be a disciple when you're at school and the challenges there might be different from the challenges of being a disciple when you're in the workplace or when you enter into, if you had the joy of raising children and you entered into family life. And it's different again when you enter into retirement. Just to have a little look at this, I'm aware of time, but I found this little video that I thought was a fun way of how children see this particular stage of our lives. Just watch this little video. There's some fantastic phrases about how children see retirement.
What does retirement mean?
Retirement is where you reach a certain age where it's more difficult for you to work.
I think it's like when you're in work and you're a long time and you feel like you want to get out. That's what I think.
You get free money from your past work experience and you just get to do whatever you want.
Yeah, it seems fun because you get to go on vacation a lot.
You can go places like France and maybe Paris.
Like rest. Kind of do chores around the house or like take a vacation to get as far as away as you want from the kids.
All the people that, you know, you maybe went to work and said, huh, looks like I gotta deal with them again.
Retirement is when you think, I've done my part, and you say to your job manager, goodbye, so long, try to find someone else that's better than me.
I think it is that you're so exhausted. You're really, really exhausted, and you're just really tired.
When I retire, I'm going to be 26.
You just quit your job, and you go home, sleep in your PJs, and probably never get out of your PJs.
Whenever you say, I'm too old for this, and then you sit at home and yell at the computer screen.
Retirement is when you just don't understand why they don't make the buttons on the remote bigger, you don't understand why all these young whippersnappers drive so fast, and your back hurts every time you bend over to feed your dog, and you know, you started getting interested in getting more and more cats, and you said, dang, I'm really sick of all these people at work, and you just wanna go travel the world and be by yourself and buy all these clothes for your grandchildren and, you know, just have more fun with your life. You don't have to worry about all the ignorance that you used to work with, and you can just go travel the world.
You like get some rest in like your home.
Like if you want to do what you want to do and you don't want to do work and you want to go like somewhere, it's really fun, and that's what I really like.
Mostly, you just lay in bed all day and watch TV pretty much the rest of your life.
It's when you get too old for your job and you go to a retirement home.
You're like probably over the age of 60.
Maybe even 50.
I've never actually seen a retirement home.
You're starting a new life again. Like you're not a pickle anymore, you're a cucumber.
I have no idea.
You get to go on vacation a lot, you put your pajamas on and you never get out of them. I'm going to retire when I'm about 26. I thought that's fantastic. It's interesting, when you do a Google search on retirement, the kind of images that come up are the sorts of things that we're maybe expected to be doing. Just some quotes from some people. Chichi Rodriguez was a professional golfer and he said, "The closer I get to retirement, the more I feel it will be a huge change, a shock, because athletics has been the core of my whole life. I know I'll miss the feeling of running fast, the adrenaline." Oh, sorry, that was a different quote. Hang on. His was, "When a man retires, his wife gets twice the man and half the income." I was reading Jessica Innes' quote. She's the one who said, "The closer I get to retirement, the more I feel like it's a huge change, a shock, because athletics has been the core of my whole life. I know I'll miss the feeling of running fast, the adrenaline rush, and hearing the crowd cheer me on." Dwight Moody said this, "Preparation for old age should begin not later than one's teens. A life which is empty of purpose until 65 will not suddenly become filled on retirement." The word retirement, it's okay. It's not the best. It focuses, it seems, it's not a word we find in the Bible. But it focuses on the act of laying something down, but perhaps signals that it's the beginning of some kind of downward slope. That we served our usefulness, and now it's time, like the kids say, just to collect more cats or whatever it is at this stage of our lives. But I would want to say that it's more a repurposing at that stage of our lives as we transition into it. There is more of God to discover and more of his purpose to discover for our lives. In the Psalm 92, I love the way in which he expresses its view of this season of our lives, where it says, "The righteous will flourish like a palm tree. They will grow like a cedar of Lebanon, planted in the house of the Lord. They will flourish in the courts of our God. They will still bear fruit in old age. They will stay fresh and green, proclaiming, 'The Lord is upright. He is my rock. And there is no wickedness in him.'" We think about the characteristics of palm trees. They're tall. They provide shade. They're a symbol of life. For the Assyrians believed that the ultimate symbol of eternal life was a tree growing beside a stream. The word eternal is translated in the Greek dictionary as primarily of quality of life. Not necessarily to do with time. So eternal life might not be so much one long lifetime or life going on forever and ever, but quality of life, color, flavor, breadth, height, depth of life, purpose, happiness, value. What about the characteristics of a cedar tree? They're grand trees when they're fully grown. The Lebanon cedar grows to 130 feet tall. And it's also kind of got this grayish brown bark, so much like many of us. These trees symbolize solidness, maturity, beauty, and growth. Again, I think sometimes we can think the world shapes how we think about this stage of our lives. My son is 24 years old, and I remember he said to me recently, he says, "Dad, I just love spending time like with my grandparents and others and hearing of their experience and getting wisdom from them. They love nothing more than that. He and his friends love to sit with my parents and hear their stories of how they got together or their working lives and the things that they know." So as we just think about this stage of our lives, there are three assumptions that I would want to make about retirement. The first is this, that whatever age or stage of life we are at, God always has good plans for us. Plans to be with us. Plans to bless us. Plans to grow us. And plans to work through us for the good of others and for the furthering of his kingdom. Within this assumption, let's assume that our later years are significant years. We may retire from paid employment, but we never retire from following the way of Jesus. Think about so many significant characters in Scripture, and I'm sure you'll know this already, but many of them were older. Some of them did some significant things in their younger years, yes, but continue to bear fruit in older age. Daniel, John, others in the Bible get introduced at a point where they are already in their older years. Abraham and Sarah, Elizabeth and Zechariah, all sorts of people doing in the Bible significant things in their older years. Whatever stage we're at, God always has good plans for us. The second assumption would be this, that retirement looks different for different people. The world almost creates a culture for us where we head towards retirement and we see it as this line that we cross, and then suddenly we'll have all this time to ourselves, but our experience of retirement can be different. Meet Simon and Nicola, and the lady on your right is Beth. Simon and Nicola are in their late 60s. They're relatively healthy in mind and body, and they're happily married. They're both computer and smartphone literate. They drive, walk, cycle. That means that they have freedom to go wherever they want to go, when they want to go there. They've got a good private pension behind them. They play tennis a couple of times a week. They have good friends. They're also actively involved in some ministries in their local church community. That's Simon and Nicola. Compare with Beth. Beth is in her late 80s. She has a wicked sense of humor. She absolutely loves God. Beth suffers from chronic pain. She has problems in her feet. She's unable to walk or drive. She's been widowed for a number of years, and she relies on carers coming into her home to help her with the practicalities of everyday life. Despite relying on family and friends for this, she actually gets to be with her church community on a Sunday more often than Simon and Nicola. Two stories, just to show how in this season of our life, everyone is different. I wonder if you relate to one or the other, but it's different for different people. The third assumption is this, that the whole of life matters. I work with LICC, and our whole thing is about whole life discipleship. Historically, some Christians have drifted into the habit of believing that some aspects of our lives matter to God and others don't. So sometimes we can head towards retirement and think, now I'll finally have time to dedicate my life to God and to the church. And some will think that volunteering in the church cafe or in a church drop-in center or volunteering for something at the church will really please God, where other things that we do, like teaching children to read in a local primary school or coaching the kids in the local football team, that's kind of a secular thing to do. One being sacred, one that God will really be interested in, and the other perhaps not so much. But the whole of our lives matters to God. It's all sacred. Whether we're influencing the grandchildren, whether we're thinking, how can I use the gifts and skills that God has developed in my life to this point, it all matters to him. And as far as church is concerned, and whilst we're not thinking about this so much today, there's that gathered aspect of the life of our church, but there's also the scattered aspects of the life of our church. Just to get this in our minds, and hopefully it's helpful even as we lay a foundation today, many see the church in this way. These six dots up in the top left-hand corner, they represent the percentage of people in our country who connect with a church community once a month or more. The other dots, the other 94 white or grey dots, depending on how they appear, that's how many of them see the church. It's that group of people who are over there in the corner with their specialist interest group. It's how many of us see the church. But those same six dots, most of the time, from Monday to Saturday, are out in other places. In the places where you live, and where you work, and where our young people study, and where we play. Those are the contexts where we call them your everyday frontline contexts. Contexts where God has you there to be you for his purposes. The whole of our lives matters. So just laying some of those foundations there, just with your neighbor, even if you don't know them, maybe introduce yourself to them. Just tell them very quickly, as you think about that early stage of what we said, whether you see yourself, going back to that Psalm 92, do you see yourself as a cedar of Lebanon, or do you see yourself as a palm tree? Just turn to each other and share with each other what you think you see yourself as. If we're going to be fruitful for God in our retirement, one of the key things and perhaps obvious things we need to do is to look back and appreciate the story that God has so far written in our lives. However we see that, whether we look back and think it's been a great story, whether it's been a tough story, this has been the experience of your life. Do you remember that moment in Joshua's story where God asked him to go back into the water and bring out the stones and build that Ebenezer? And he said, he did that in order to say, just you can see, this represents the journey so far, how you can see how I've led you to this point, and you can trust me to lead you on into the future. When I think about the seasons of our life, a year consists of different seasons, and so do our lives. So as you look back on the seasons of your life, I wonder what you see. Each season has its own beauty, its own purpose, its own opportunities, and of course, its own challenges. As we walk through life with God, in every season, he wants to bless us, to draw us closer to himself and help us to become more like Jesus and to involve us in his great mission. And as we move into or find ourselves in this new season, once we find ourselves in retirement or as we approach it, we don't enter it with a blank slate. It's not that we just wipe the slate clean and think, I can leave that behind now and just move on. Whether our retirement is a gradual or a sudden process, it doesn't magically turn us into different people. My old college principal always used to say, as now, so then. He said, don't imagine that once you get to a certain stage of life, suddenly you're going to be able to be closer to God or you'll be living for him more. He just said, as now, so then. The slate is not clean. Whether our retirement is that gradual process or not, we are still us. Into our retirement years, we bring ourselves, our experiences, our memories, our ideas, our perceptions, our good habits, our bad habits, our successes, our scars, our faith, and our continuing doubts. Now, looking over our shoulder and remembering is key to fruitfulness. Now, I'm 56, and I'm beginning to realize that remembering seems to be one of the problems of getting older. I'll ask somebody's name, and within seconds, it seems as though it's just disappeared. Ow. I came across this poem. You may know it's the Serenity Prayer. God, give me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. But I came across a different one. It's called the Senility Prayer. Have you come across this? This is how it goes. God, grant me the senility to forget the people I never liked anyway. The good fortune to run into the ones that I do, and the eyesight to tell the difference when I... Now, you'll want to remember that and share it with a friend when you leave, but you probably won't. So I'm just I'm just saying. Katie and John are in their early 70s. They've been retired for several years now. John spent the bulk of his working life as a project manager, planning projects, managing teams, and as a facilities manager, looking after buildings. Katie spent many years focusing her energy on raising the four children, tutoring her son who has dyslexia, and supporting her other children, and that had been excluded from kind of mainstream education. For a long time, she volunteered with a pregnancy crisis center, supporting potential mothers-to-be in one of the most emotionally volatile periods of their lives. And through all this, to the present day, they've been heavily involved in their local church, including leadership team responsibilities, helping to oversee building projects, and hosting a home group. When John talks about his former life, it's clear that he quite enjoyed the work that he did. And he particularly misses the camaraderie that came from what we might call relationships with a purpose. He still connects with people through his accordion club, his camera club, and volunteering teaching disabled people to sail. But it's not quite the same as day in, day out work alongside others. He's grateful to God for guiding him in his career and for providing him with meaningful work that enabled him to make a difference and to provide for his family. But one thing he definitely doesn't miss is having to get up before 6 a.m. every morning to work an exhaustingly long day. When Katie looks back on her life, what particularly stands out for her is a young girl who was really struggling at school. Katie was helping her work towards obtaining a GCSE in childcare, but then the girl got pregnant and massively fell behind with her work. The girl was ready to give up, but Katie was determined to help her finish the course and gain the qualification, and to help this young girl become the best mother that she could be. Katie and she worked incredibly hard, and amazingly, this girl, her daughter, obtained her qualification. What about you? Just in a moment of reflection, when you think back, even at this stage, whether you're not quite there yet or whether you are in retirement, what do you miss? What do you miss? What don't you miss? I'd encourage you just with these questions, whether you do it today or sometime, if you're really serious about this season of your life and your discipleship, just to journal it a little bit. Make some notes. What do you miss? What don't you miss? What did you enjoy the most? And try and take your mind not just to perhaps the paid work, if that was something of your life, or whether it was raising the kids, but every aspect. Thinking about the things that you did in your leisure time or things you did with your church community. What do you miss? What do you not miss? What did you enjoy the most at that stage? Again, just in one moment, pick one of those. Maybe turn to your neighbor and say, I really don't miss. I'll give you just maybe 15, 20 seconds just to do that. Just tell a neighbor what you miss or don't miss. Remembering is such a key thing. It's such a key thing in terms of looking back and trying to see what has God done in my life? What has the great author done as he's penned the story of my life with me as I've walked with him? If we turn to, let me just share with you this passage from 2 Corinthians chapter 1, where Paul is looking back on his experiences and remembering. I'll read it to you. It says this. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. For just as we share abundantly in the sufferings of Christ, so also our comfort abounds through Christ. If we are distressed, it is for your comfort and salvation. If we are comforted, it is for your comfort, which produces in you patient endurance of the same sufferings we suffer. And our hope for you is firm, because we know that just as you share in our sufferings, so also you share in our comfort. We do not want you to be uninformed, brothers and sisters, about the troubles we experienced in the province of Asia. We were under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired of life itself. Indeed, we felt we had received the sentence of death. But this happened, that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead. He has delivered us from such a deadly peril, and he will deliver us again. On him we have set our hope that he will continue to deliver us as you help us in your prayers. Then many will give thanks on our behalf for the gracious favor granted us in the answer to the prayers of many. So Paul is looking in the rearview mirror and noticing the challenges and the pressures that he had been through. He's also noticing where God was along the way. They say, don't they, that you have to live life going forward, but often it only comes into view or makes sense when you look back on it. And God had delivered them through the various life challenges that they had faced. God will, he says, deliver them to the end, taking us through the things that hurt us or harm us, or the things that we have hang-ups about in our lives. These things that could enslave us if we let them. And the word deliver means to draw to oneself. God is always, in each season of our life, trying to draw us just closer and closer to him. For Paul to remember was absolutely key as he reflected on the challenges of his life. He could look back and know that God had delivered him in the various times. So as you look back on your life, how do you see it? Do you remember well? I'd encourage you again, whether you take out some time over this time at Keswick or at some point where you kind of draw a lifeline and just mark out the key moments of your lives and map out, where did I see God in those different moments of my life? I guarantee that it will begin to bring a picture to you that you think, oh, he was with us there. Look what he did with that experience. Look what experience that I've been through. Look at the wisdom that I've gained as I look back upon my life. 2 Corinthians 3:9 says, this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead. I think too often in my Christian life, I try and go at it in my own strength. And what God's saying to us, interestingly, in this week where our general theme is about resurrection, that I think that God can take all the experiences of our lives, all the things that have happened to us, and give them new life in this particular season. I want to end, just before we have time for kind of sharing with each other, with a story about Moses. Moses was called by God at a very particular moment in his life. And one of the defining moments in the life of Moses was when God asked him this question. Moses, what do you have in your hands? At this moment in Moses' life, he's about 80 years old. Moses has a shepherd's staff in his hands. Shepherding wasn't exactly the number one career choice that parents had for their children, but shepherding was for people of low social standing. But this is what Moses has in his hands. I can imagine what my parents were thinking at times in terms of what I had in my hands. I've had to come to learn that God can use anything that we have. When I was, now this is not, this is younger life, but it's still kind of just how I've seen God at work in my life. When I was a young person, I didn't do very well at school. I spent most of my time messing around playing pool in amusement arcades and playing darts in a local pub. If you'd have asked me about the age of 17 or 18, what do you have in your hands? I'd have said, Well, I'm pretty good with a pool cue, and I'm very good with a set of darts. That's what I've got in my hands. How can God possibly use a set of darts? One of the most powerful pastoral conversations I ever had as a Baptist minister was with a young man over a game of darts. This lad could not come to terms with the loss of his father. His father had worked for Transport for London all his working life. And I knew him. His name was Dave. Dave was approaching retirement. And he got all these plans for his retirement years. Dave died at the age of 64. He didn't quite get to the line that he saw that life was suddenly open out. And at the funeral at the crematorium, his son was sat at the back. He couldn't come to terms with his loss. And at the pub afterwards, when they were having sandwiches and so on, he just came up to me. I don't know why he asked me. He said, "Steve, would you like to play darts?" I thought, I know how to play darts. We spent 2 hours playing darts. As we walked up and down the occhi playing darts, this young guy poured out about the loss of his father. Folks, God can use anything. All I had in my hands was a set of darts. For Moses, his shepherd's staff represented his identity, his income, and his influence. And when God said to him in that moment, "Moses, what do you have in your hands? Lay it down on the ground." And when Moses laid it down on the ground, what happened to it? It came alive. It became a snake. And then God said to him, "Pick it up again." And when he picked it up again, it became his shepherd's staff again. If you read the story, from that moment on, Moses' shepherd's staff is never referred to again as his shepherd's staff. It's always in the story referred to as the rod of God. When we offer to God what we have in our hands, God can take those ordinary things and make them extraordinary. So what do you have in your hands? I've come to God and felt so many times like, this is all I've got. A pool cue. I spent my first 10 years working in the building trade. I was a bricklayer. I had a brick trowel, a pool cue, and a set of darts. And I've doubted so many times whether God could use me for his purposes, but he will. And he has. And he's even used those things for his purposes. What do you come to this season with in your hands? Mark Green, the former CEO at LICC, said this. He said, "The average student has more opportunities for evangelism than most pastors. The average parent at the school gate has more opportunity for pastoral care than most pastors. And the average grandparent has more opportunities for one-to-one discipleship than the average pastor. And yet they have not been equipped nor envisioned for it." As you come to this transition moment, what do you have in your hands? What do you bring in experiences, in skills, in interests? Will you, in this moment, will you lay it down? Will you offer it to God and say, "It feels to me like loaves and fish in my hands, but in yours, it could become something extraordinary"? Will you offer it to God? We're going to take some time. I'm aware of the time, coming up to 10:15. Be good to open this up. And I thought when we came to this time together, I reckon the wisdom's in the room. I am certainly no expert on the topic of retirement, but I'd be interested just today to open up for 10 minutes or so for us to think about. We maybe have questions, and that's fine. We can share in questions, but you may have observations. You may have things that you want to contribute. For this particular seminar, we're going to be tomorrow thinking more about who am I in retirement and where am I and what am I there to do. We'll be going a little bit deeper into that, but we're going to open out for 10 minutes or so. So if you've got a question, maybe what I'll do, just because sometimes it helps to formulate it, give you a minute just to talk to each other. What are one or two things that are coming to your mind today about this season for you? And then maybe that will help you to formulate either a comment, a question, you want to share some wisdom with us. But let's give you a minute just to do that now. Maura's got a microphone, so it can come around if you've got a question or something you feel like you could helpfully contribute in this first seminar. That would be great. If you just, I'll try and see you if you raise a hand and we'll come to you.
Okay, I'm in the enviable position that I've not quite got to the retirement. So for me, this is just looking ahead. And one of the observations that we were making was that I have a structure currently to my day. I actually work for Keswick Ministries, so 9 o'clock is devotions, staff devotions, and then I have that time. So we were just saying, is it beneficial to actually give yourself a structure to your day and say, you know, I am going to get up at 9 o'clock and do my devotions, come a set time, do. And then Sheila was saying, you know, she writes herself a to-do list to prioritise. Is that the best way, or are we just to say, right, Lord, what's ahead for today?
I think the first thing, thank you, that's, and I think just really, really helpful, because I think from my perspective, I'd be interested to see if there's others in the room who have found in their transition they've changed the structure of their day. What I imagine is that in any transition moment, there's always a kind of, it's always disorientating. It'll always do that to you, and it'll involve a change of to your daily routine and so on. I often think of families, often you'll hear mums particularly say, I don't get any time with God anymore, in terms of I just don't have space for that. And that makes me think of a guy called Ronald Rolheiser, wrote a brilliant little book called The Domestic Monastery, where he talks about just the rhythm of being with your children will be your, you know, your kind of spiritual rhythm going forward from here. And it will bring you closer to God than perhaps your previous rhythm. I would say, and not everybody likes, I like structure to my day, but what I imagine is that there is a change of that structure. And I imagine it just takes time to evolve into it. I wonder if, has anybody got any wisdom in the room? Have you moved into that season that you say, this is how it worked for me? Yeah, it's perfect, right over the other side. Next handover, no, I'm joking, more of you.
When I was working, I used to get up at 20 past five and get ready for, and just before I left for work, I take my wife a cup of tea to help her wake up, but she's terrible waking up. She admit that, it's all right. Now it's changed to I get up at 20 past six and make us both a cup of tea, and we have a cup of tea together in the morning. But there are times when I go back to sleep when she's having a shower and getting ready to start work. But I've always liked lists. So I've got a list of what's happening this week, I've got a plan, what I want to do, and a list of long-term things that maybe one day we'll get done. That helps.
So make it, just again, an acknowledgement that the season brings that change, but also just kind of trying to bring structure into your day is a helpful thing. That's really helpful. I think if nothing else, these things are just helpful to hear, that you just acknowledge, you think, oh yeah, I see that, I recognise that, and it's nice to know that others are in the same boat.
We're just talking about structure. I always get up at 8 o'clock in the morning, don't ask me why, and I've found a fantastic thing called Lectio 365. It's run by 24/7 prayer, and I do that every morning, and that's a great start to the day. So on another question, we were talking about how retirement brings with it lack of identity. You know, people say to you, what do you do? And I say, oh, well, I was a teacher. Now, why I feel that I have to say that, I don't know. But that's, I think, maybe a problem for a lot of people, your lack of identity when you retire.
That's really helpful. Yeah, we're going to dive into think about sort of identity and so on tomorrow, because I think it's a real issue. Again, in different seasons of retirement. It's no different for a young person transitioning into the world of university, from university into the world of work, or somebody becoming a parent. Your identity is always at question, I think, in those moments. Lex, you were mentioning Lexio 365, absolutely brilliant resource. If you're aware of that, great way of for your devotional life, really, really useful. Yes.
Yeah, I think identity is a big thing. I've only been retired 10 months, and I still feel I'm, you know, in that period, and I wanted it to be quicker, and that's not happened, and that can be quite frustrating.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that you've made me think about is that question now, what do you have in your hands? It's a really important one, because I thought God would want me to do different things when I retired, and actually, that's not what I've got in my hands, is it? What I've got in my hands is the things that I bring from looking in the rearview mirror. So I thank you for that. It's just helped me to perhaps think not that I should do lots and lots of new things, but that I should offer things differently.
I think it can be a season for discovering new things. But I do think we've got to acknowledge sometimes, and sometimes we devalue it in ourselves. Like I, for a long time, because of the type of job I did, and sometimes I think, well, I'm just a, you know, I'm just a bricklayer, or I'm just a parent, or I'm just a, I think we've got to stop with that, because I think God, again, can take us as we are with the skills that we have and what we have in our hands, and he knows that, and he really can use them for his purposes, I think. So, lady, did you, in the front row, yeah? It's like an auction, isn't it? You don't move in case, I didn't mean to buy it.
Hi, I'm Angela, I'm 63, and so I haven't had a lot of time to officially retire, but we moved house and I stopped work. The thing I've been thinking about is the two threads we were speaking of discipline and time and structure. It's just, so just listening to those just made me aware of thinking it's helpful to for me, and I can't see what the ages of people behind, of what your personal discipline is and your structure that you've had in your life that may actually normally have shaped your day, your structure, made you get up, your job, you had to do this, had to do that. One thing I felt annoyed about is that without that structure, I was a nurse, so I had early starts, is that suddenly I can be a bit slack and a bit lazy with managing my time. And so it might be helpful for those of you who haven't yet got to that to think about knowing yourself, what sets your time, what sets your day, and making sure that you don't allow that to just let you slip and lose time. So half an hour that used to be very precious when you were working suddenly disappears into nothing. And just thinking about how you're going to use best your physical skills, your time skills, and obviously everything else that we've talked about. That's something I'm going to go and think about.
That's really helpful.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, that's really helpful. You're making me think, so, as lady, Maura, just head towards the back. There's a couple of folk in the middle there. My dad retired some years ago, and I think, and my mum has, but it's just making me think about my dad. My dad got through his whole working life without his church ever giving him a vision for the work that he did. Because church generally values and can, as a culture, and I speak as a church minister, we can put a lot of sort of priority upon the things you do at church. And Dad discovered this thing that LICC talk about of our front lines. And he does volunteer at his local church community, but he also drives people to their hospital appointments for a local charity. And he's excited. He's got two in his head. He now says, my grandchildren are my front line, and driving those people to their appointments is my front line. God has me there doing that. And he can see that now, whereas previously he saw that only volunteering at the church. So it's kind of helped him really understand the breadth of what God's got him involved in. A couple more comments and then we'll... yes, thank you.
Various things have come in my mind as I'm hearing people. But I think one thing I would say is that we need to be kind to ourselves and not feel that we have to be pushed into being busy. And I think it's important that we just take time to allow God to let us be ourselves and to hear him. I moved church a few years ago, well, just after the pandemic, really, and I had that sense that God said, right, you just need to wait on me. So it was a positive waiting, not an unproductive waiting. And I think at a different stage of our lives, we just need to give God time and not be pushed into doing. A book that I found when I was working was Tony Horsfall's book, Rhythms of Grace, and he kind of talks about that. So I suppose as part of my life, I've made sure that I'm not busy all the time necessarily. It's not that I don't do things, but it's being intentional about what do I do with my time that God has given me. I've been retired for a few years now. I was a teacher, which is a very structured job. And I said to a friend who ran a Scripture Union's outdoor centre, and I've been involved with Scripture Union all my life, I said, I need structure. So I started working 2 days a week doing catering. And then when younger friends there had their first child, they said, would you care to consider looking after X one day a week? Now, I am single, never had children. And so I did that when James was 8 months. I looked after him one day a week, every week, from 8:30 in the morning till 5 at night. So we're very bonded, I have to say. So I didn't see that coming. So that kind of came to me as I made myself available. Well, it's for now. But I don't think we need to push ourselves and worry too much about what God has got. But we just need to give God time and ourselves time. Be kind to ourselves and just be going with a listening ear. But not frenetically.
That's really helpful. Yeah. And sometimes it comes to us as, I think we're going to, I'm just conscious of the time. We can bring more questions tomorrow, if that's good, because Maura's going to come and wrap us up in prayer in just a moment. And the youth are in here next. And being the young, fit people, we are going to get out quick. I think just one last thing to say in this particular session in terms of our expectations coming into this season. There's a couple in our church, Olive and John, and they both ran a business together all their working lives, ran a greengrocer's. And when they got to retirement, John just did not handle the transition at all and physically went into kind of quite a vegetative state. And Olive ended up having to care for him for the next 12 years of his life just at home. It just, something affected him in that way. What I'm trying to say, sometimes I think we imagine, you know, coming into the season, oh, it can all be, I get to choose and we might be able to do this, that and the other. For Olive, she really wrestled with that. But she was such a godly woman. But the way in which she cared for John was unexpected, but she did it so lovingly and wonderfully. But it was a really tough season, which it can be as well.